This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, I should say host, but also realtors with Oakwin Realty in downtown Vancouver. And I'm so excited for today. We've got Darren Kwiatkowski on the show. He is the executive vice president and founding partner at Shape Properties. Everybody knows Shape.
Everybody knows Shape. Adam, you missed this one. And I'm telling you, you missed one for the ages. Let's put it that way.
Did
everybody
talk the market?
We talked the market. We talked the Shape story, which I didn't know.
Yes.
From buying Brentwood Town Center in the financial crisis to meeting I'll let him explain, but yeah. Meeting the city of Burnaby to find out they want to build basically a second downtown and Shape owns the land and the shopping mall that they want to do it on. To the rest, of course, the city of Lougheed is another Shape Properties project.
Right.
Just the scale and the vision and the kind of decades-long project process that these guys take on is next level. So it's so great having Darren on. And he's a really smart guy and it's a really interesting conversation.
You know, I go to the amazing Brentwood quite a bit. Good spot to go with the family. And spend a lot of time at that arcade kind of place.
Yeah. The rec center. You know what? I met Darren after this at the amazing Brentwood. I don't know if I told you this. So I went, we were meeting at like 4. It was sunny out. I'll preface it with that. But I went in, I was like, oh, I got to go to the fountain. I couldn't remember where the fountain was. And they have near it's not called the food court. It's called Tables, I think,
right,
where they have
Tables. I've been
funny story about that. It's actually the amazing Brentwood LES Tables.
Oh.
Tab.
Oh, that's an acronym.
Yeah. Well, kind of, I think. But anyway, I walk in there and they have this big screen where they have what's going on in the fountain at that time. And it was literally like a perfect description of creating a space that people were using. They have ping pong tables down there.
Right.
There's kids playing ping pong. There's people with dogs. There's people coming off the SkyTrain. I was like, man, this is literally to hear this conversation and kind of think of what's become. It's an interesting thing and kind of an amazing.
Probably me upstairs playing that claw game where you're trying to grab whatever.
I spent a year or two ago, I spent a lot of time at the rec center. luckily my kid's growing out of it.
Oh man. Well, speaking of Darren, I obviously didn't get a chance to be on this conversation. I'm sad I missed it, but I did. You were saying he's a pretty good hockey player.
It comes up in this conversation, almost drafted, played in the WHL in the late 80s, which I think is probably almost as scary as growing up in Prince George, where I think he grows up. I'm going to tell the whole story.
Just say he's tougher than you. That's all you got to say.
All I got to say is bang.
Yeah,
that bang.
Oh, did you? You know, that's the funniest thing. It's funny because we just, we were talking about this morning, but that the viral video of
who's the former NHL player, I can't remember. That is playing.
Golfing in Alberta, I think it is too. Okay.
Waiting 15 minutes for two guys to tee off that are super drunk.
One guy's so drunk he can't. The guy who gets beat up.
Yeah.
It's like he comes to and then he runs at the biggest guy on the golf course.
The argument they're having though is so strange because the guy who ends up beating this guy up is like, let us play through. Like, it's the most obvious thing that should happen. Like, the course is basically empty. You guys are so drunk you can't walk. You've been on the tee box for 15 minutes. Like, let us play through. And he's like, no, not having that. Plus, the guy's a monster that he attacks.
He's huge. Well, not to get too sidetracked on this, but the one thing, the funny comment I saw was somebody was like, he should have, instead of saying bang when he punched him, he should have been saying four. And I was like, oh, that's gold. Anyways, Matt, before we get to this conversation with Darren, which I'm super excited about, of course, this podcast is sponsored by Scalina Real Estate, which is our team, and a segment that remains nameless. It's a trivia segment. It covers real estate, Vancouver, sometimes Canada. What do you got?
I got, well, this is actually, I wouldn't say inspired by the Bang Bang viral video, but it does involve alcohol. So Adam, two Vancouver breweries won gold at this year's Canadian Brewing Awards in two respective categories. It doesn't matter. The question I have for you is, which two Vancouver breweries won gold? And in fact, you just have to name one. I'm going to give you a list.
Okay.
They're both on this list. They won gold at the Canadian Brewing Awards. Powell Street Craft Brewery.
Okay.
Superfox Beer Company. Strathcona Brewery. 33 Acres. Main Street Brewing Company. Brass Neck, Storm, Parallel 49.
I'm going to go Superfox.
Oh, before you go, Adam. Oh, yeah. Let's give everybody a chance to all think right, of the okay, two okay. Vancouver breweries right. that won gold.
I know nothing about this other than
also you're clearly showing your colors. You're pretty quick on which ones you thought got gold. But before you say the ones that got gold, let's talk about one of our listings over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Oh, and I love this place. This, of course, is 3337 West 40th. This is a half duplex. Check this out in terms of the size. It's the size of a house. It's 2,300 square feet of interior space. You have a 1,700 square foot backyard. It's like a full backyard.
Oh, with a fire table. It's like dialed too.
It's completely dialed. It's a beautiful place. And of course, built in 2021. So still under the 2510 warranty, of course. And you've got AC, you've got radiant in-floor heating. It is a 5-bedroom, 3-bath with an attached garage in Dunbar. What more can I say? It's fantastic. And we're actually open there this weekend on
Saturday 2 to 4, we'll be there. And I got to say, I've shown this property a few times. And the comment is, not only is it the size of a house, it feels like a house.
Oh, that for is, sure.
People walk in and they're like, oh my God.
It's a true, it's a true West Side family home. Listed at 2799900, Matt. This is great value. Check it out at our website, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And while you're there, Adam, of course, you can click sell with us and download the sold plan. This is our most downloaded document of all time. Start on launch date. That's the acronym. I think you came up with that acronym. Fantastic branding.
You're not as good as tables, but
it's pretty good. Start on launch date. Download that today. Just click sell with us at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com and check out our other featured listings.
Yeah, Matt. Okay, so now I have to come up with two beers. This is really challenging.
I know you know these off by heart, but should I read that list again? Okay. Do I need to?
If I know these off by heart. Here's the thing. I'm going to go with just my own preference of when I try beer and say, oh, that's a really good brewery.
Yeah.
Like across the board, I'm going to go Superflux and 33 Acres.
Okay. So the two Vancouver breweries that won gold at the Canadian Brewing Awards were Superflux and 33 Acres. This is one of the first times you've been entirely wrong. It was
really?
Powell Street.
Wow.
Received gold for its Czech Pilsner.
Oh,
that's one of your favorites.
That's a Czech Pilsner. That's a good beer.
Strathcona was the second, which is, I feel like you...
We spent a lot of time...
You live near there.
Did the Big Sexy Funk...
No. It's in Power Love Buzz. It was in the fruit beer category.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think... Yeah, neither of us have tried, nor am I that interested in trying that one. But the Czech Pilsner sounds delicious.
Yeah. Well, Matt, without further ado, let's cut to this conversation with Darren.
Enjoy.
This podcast is sponsored by Atlin at Clayton Crest, a master plan community in the West Clayton area built by Zentera Developments.
Zentera is an absolute force, Adam. They've been nominated for Multifamily Builder of the Year for 10 consecutive years and just won again at the Georgies for 2025 Multifamily Home Builder of the Year.
What's really exciting about Atlin is the West Clayton location. You're within walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, giving you that perfect balance of city access while living in a peaceful, family-friendly community in the Fraser Valley.
And if you have kids or are planning to start a family, there's an on-site daycare where residents get first access. This kind of thoughtful planning is why Zentera's projects stand out in the market.
The amenities at Atlin are incredible too, Matt. A rooftop patio with stunning views, fitness center, co-working space, and lounge areas for events. The outdoor space is extensive with 2 fitness areas, 3 children's play areas, and multiple spots to relax.
With major investments happening in the SkyTrain and the 72nd Avenue extension, West Clayton is set for explosive growth. This is genuinely one of those opportunities to invest in a community before values skyrocket.
And that's really the key here. This isn't just about finding a beautiful place to live. It's about making a smart investment in your future as the whole area continues to develop.
Pre-sales for Atlin will begin soon. Register today at atlincondos.ca. That's atlincondos.ca. Okay, so we're here with Darren Kwiatkowski, Executive Vice President and Founding Partner at Shape Properties. How you doing, Darren?
I'm doing really good, Matt. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thanks for taking the time. I feel like it's shocking to me that we've never had somebody from Shape on. So really excited to talk to you today.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah, thank you guys. You and your team are doing an awesome job. So honored to be invited to be a guest today.
Oh, right on. Thank you very much. Well, maybe for our guests that don't know you, Darren, and don't know Shape Properties, can you start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. Today I'm married to my wife, Jamie, for 26 years, and we have three wonderful daughters, 22, 20, and 16. And we live in Tawasin, but I grew up in Prince George. My family lived there for all my childhood. My dad worked at the pulp mill. My mom was a legal secretary. Yeah, growing up, I was shy. Probably call it social anxiety today. But I was super competitive and loved sports and any game that had strategy to it. Yeah, I was all over it. Hockey was my favorite. And I dreamed of playing in the NHL. I was decent. I wasn't a superstar. I was able to make the WHL when I was 16, played for the Kamloops Blazers, and then proceeded to get traded four times. So I played for five different teams in 4 years. I like to think that everybody wanted me, but it was probably in purse. And when I didn't get drafted, I started thinking about Plan B. So I went to university at UBC, took commerce, which it was called at the time, urban land economics. And between third and fourth year, I thought I should try to get a job in the industry versus going home to plant trees or work at the pulp mill. So I picked up the Yellow Pages at the time and looked up commercial real estate firms and started dialing. And I was fortunate to get a job with a company at the time called Moulton Realty, which was doesn't exist anymore, but it was a boutique firm doing kind of large office lease sales and transactions. And while I was there for the summer, I kind of figured out who was involved in the large transactions. And I was able to convince them to hire me when I graduated the next year, which was 1993. I started off as the assistant with Bob Levine and Uncle Gil. Bob Levine's still in the industry with Avison Young, but Gil died a few years ago. About a year into that, my time there at Moulton Realty, we were out for dinner one night, and Bob tapped me on the shoulder and said, "We're leaving." I said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Mike, Bob." I said, "Mike and myself, Bob Levine and one other gentleman, Andrew Turner, are leaving. We're moving to start our own firm. And we're hooking up the two individuals from, it was called Royal LePage at the time. Now it's Cushman Wakefield, which was John Horton and Mark Hanna. And that was the startup of what's now Avison Young. So I was, employee number one on the brokerage side. John Horton is my partner at Shape today. Mark Hanna heads up real estate for Nicola Wealth. And yeah, so super exciting to be part of a startup. I was there for 6 years. I wasn't the best broker in the world, probably because I couldn't help myself from getting too deeply in the weeds. At the time, you didn't have full teams to do research, which they do now, and they're able to put parties together and do proper research. And I had the opportunity to join a development company at the time called First Pro Shopping Centers. Now they're called Smart Centers REIT. At the time, they were super active. And I was there for 6 years and then decided to, branch out. And I hooked up with John Horton and three other and two other individuals, Brad Stokes and Graham Johnson, and the four of us started Shape. That was 2005. And yeah, it's been 20 years. Yeah, it's been an awesome ride. I'm super thankful and yeah, grateful for all the opportunities that God's given me. So yeah, couldn't happen without a lot of other individuals, but yeah, it's pretty wild. We're starting off with Prince George and now working on big projects.
No kidding. Before we get into Shape, I just got to ask, I was going to say, man, it must have been the mean streets of Prince George in the 80s. But actually the WHL in the late 80s, even more so. That yeah. kind of strikes me as one of the, maybe, I don't know, maybe the 70s, but you were still, that was a very tough time to be in the WHL. Any horror stories?
Oh, yeah, well, for sure. Yeah, my first exhibition game, I was in Kamloops. I was 16. Our first game, exhibition game, was against the New Westminster Bruins, the big bad New Westminster Bruins. And they had just hired a legendary coach, Pudge. I believe it was Ernie McLean had come back. And the night before, bench brawl, full on, I think it was in Chilliwack against Seattle, full on bench brawl, everybody fighting. And I'm looking at this the next night thinking, no. So, yeah, it was different times and intimidation was a big part of it.
Well, and I guess as a 16-year-old, for listeners who don't know, like you're playing 21-year-olds as well, right? Like there's a big age gap there.
Yeah, Craig Berube is on our team. He's now the coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. He was, he was the goon. He was a man, right? Like he, like full on, right? Yeah, like he was wasn't a the man.
He was a man.
A man. And I'm, this shy kid. That's probably the best thing that ever happened to me. Like just being put in that circumstance. And as funny as it sounds, playing for five teams over 4 years. Yeah, it was forced me to get out of my comfort zone.
So was the, and I guess just thinking back to real estate here quickly, it sounds like after the WHL went on to UBC, why real estate? Was it, sounds like your competition is kind of in your blood, but what drew you to real estate?
Yeah, I had plan B. Like I was always interested in business and I used to love kind of whether it was reading biographies, like it was mostly like, Bobby Orr and like hockey guys, like what made them successful or whatever. So like, it was just like complete. I was in the library, like in the summer in Prince George. I'm going tree planting. I think I'm going to go get some reading material. I go to the library and I'm walking through the business section. And there's this book. It's called Seckendorf. I bought a copy 2 years ago. Like just it sits on my, because I thought it was super cool. So it was William Seckendorf, and the title, and I've got it here, is The Autobiography of the Man Who Played a Real-Life Game of Monopoly and Won the Largest Real Estate Empire in History. I read it, and it's like, And I always loved cities, right? Like, I grew up in Prince George, but, like, we had relatives in Vancouver and Edmonton, Winnipeg, down in San Francisco. Like, my family went camping all the time. It was okay, but I loved going to, like, cities. So it was probably a distraction in my hockey career. I don't remember my first goal, but I remember being on the bus, the Tamas Blazers bus, driving into Seattle. And the rink at the time was right beside the Space Needle, beside where Climate Pledge Arena is now. Like, so driving down into the city, like the hub and the vibrancy, I was like, this is like so cool. So when I saw this book, like Monopoly, cities, so yeah, sure enough, I read this thing and it's like, he's the Wayne Gretzky of real estate, like notable projects, United Nations building in New York, Century City, he started that in Los Angeles, Place Ville Marie, I think I'm pronouncing it correct, in Montreal. And you're not going to believe this one, like the last development he did before he died was Brentwood Mall in Burnaby. He was the founder. Some of your listeners will remember Trizic Conn. They owned the Royal Bank building downtown for many years. He was kind of the founding, one of the founding partners in the Trizic, which full circle in 2009, in Shape, we bought Brentwood Mall. You can't make this up. Like, it's so bizarre. So yeah, when I remembered, I kind of like years later, I remembered, okay, like I remembered about it. That's why I went out and bought the book, because I thought, yeah, this is kind of meaningful.
Right on. And so I guess moving on to Shape. So you, can you talk about the founding of Shape and the vision, and maybe for listeners, and I'll let you explain it, but for listeners who somehow don't know Shape, like you're doing, it's not like you do, you know, a building here, a building there. Your projects are like the amazing Brentwood. It's like the full mall conversion, Lougheed Town Center. The scale of the projects are something unlike anywhere else in Metro Vancouver, as far as I am aware. So can you talk a little bit about the founding of Shape, and did the vision evolve, or was that kind of day one you had, you know, this grand vision of the future?
Yeah, no, it all evolved out of circumstance and opportunity. We started off, like our backgrounds, we had lots of experience in shopping centers and retail. So we started off focusing on, you know, kind of twofold, buying existing shopping centers that we thought were super well located, but underappreciated by the market, that we thought we could add value through aesthetic renovations, lease up, densification, rebranding, and 50% kind of ground up greenfield, brownfield retail development. When we started in 2005, the first property we bought was Port Alberni Mall on the island out of bankruptcy. So we had our history is between the partners. We had really strong relationships with the retail and the anchor tenants. I'd worked a lot with Walmart. My partners worked with Home Depot, Canadian Tire. One other had kind of covered all the active tenants, the grocery stores, Loblaws, kind of mid-sized tenants, the Winners, the Best Buy. So we knew kind of, like, that was our wheelhouse. We knew what markets they wanted to be in, what markets they weren't. So that was our focus. We shortly thereafter, we bought Nanaimo. It was Rutherford Mall at the time. Now it's, we rebranded Nanaimo North Town Center, and we're able to do a Canadian Tire added to the site, a Best Buy, and that started the rejuvenation. So, over a few years, it started to become, move from secondary tertiary markets to, suburban Metro Vancouver markets, Calgary, and kind of this low density, single purpose retail became, more compact, structured underground parking, structured parking, more urban. Yeah. And then 2008 happened, global financial crisis. We get a phone call from a broker in Toronto. He's listed for sale. Brentwood Town Center Mall, 2007, like we would have never got a phone call. Like there was no lineup for 20 buyers, and we were, just starting out small. 2008, the broker's flying out to Toronto, to Vancouver. He's trying to set up meetings with investors. He's struggling to get meetings. Like I can tell. So, we kind of were at the bottom of the list because we kind of bought these struggling malls, and Brentwood wasn't really necessarily the same category, but it was 3 kilometers from Metrotown. It needed renovations, and ultimately we kind of knew, just given our history, we knew that it was, but we didn't buy it with this grand plan. We were the only offer, I believe. Maybe there was one lowball offer, but I never been able to verify that. We were the only offer, and for a few reasons. One is it was quite large, so it was just over $100 million, which puts it out of the price range for lots of buyers. And, most of the institutions were all on the sidelines of 2008. And the other large residential developers, my understanding is, it doesn't come with certainty. So we bought it on fundamentals, not on the grand plan, right? 28 acres at Lougheed and Wellington on the SkyTrain, good holding income. That was, minimum risk. This can't get worse. This is only going to get better. And if we're lucky, we're going to be able to negotiate with the anchor tenants and free up development rights. Because at the time, it was Zellers, Sears, London Drugs. They all had kind of restrictions on the parking lot. So there was no guarantee that we were going to be able to do what we did. So fortunately, I partnered John Horton, who's president and CEO. He had a strong relationship from his brokerage days with Hoop, possibly the Ontario Pension Plan. We had built a shopping center with him in Abbotsford. They owned at the time Wellington Business Park just down the street. So they knew Burnaby. And, frankly, they were one of the few institutions just kind of willing to, in the in the middle of the meltdown to look at new sites. But it was basically, here's the fundamentals. And then, we sat, nevertheless, we bought it and we sat now at the city and we sat, we knew they had it identified in their official community plan for mixed use densification. But we sat now at the planner at the time and they were like, first thing out of its mouth was, we don't want you to build towers in the parking lot. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like your OCP. Say, well, if you're going to build towers, we want that part of a holistic master plan, transforms the suburban shopping center into a city center with real roads and public realm and connectivity woven into the urban fabric. I'm like, we came from like suburbia, low density. I'm like, okay, that, I'm walking out of there and think, like, I got to go back to my partners and this sounds complicated. But in hindsight, it was the absolute best thing we could ever heard. Like that was, the differentiator. We're able to free up the no builds. We're able to put in place a master plan that, transform what is a suburban mall into what really feels like a city center. Not only did we, was it transformative for the property, it was transformative for us to shape as we've been able to, follow that up with purchasing Lowy Shopping Center 5 miles, 8 kilometers down the road, and then partnering with Cadillac Fairview at Richmond Center to do similar things, master plan, mixed use on SkyTrain. So that's kind of the history. The super tall building there, but again, that wasn't the plan. Like it was, we sat down at the city and okay, we got the consulting team, everyone gets around the table, it was Ein Sherratt. And, at one side of the property, the north side, you got single family homes. And at the southwest corner, you got the SkyTrain. Well, makes sense that you're going to skew the density closest to the corner. And the city and their plan had this idea, well, not this idea, requirement for this civic plaza, which we were very fortunate. Like they were, the mayor was like, we want this to be an urban plaza. I mean, we've got SFU, we've got, we've got Deer Lake, we have Central Park. We want like an urban plaza where people can gather, where we can have a drink and watch the hockey game. So, there started the exercise of where that plaza goes. And then it ends up, for various reasons, we thought we could, activate it and make it super active by putting it right beside the SkyTrain. So that pushed the towers out away to make enough room. So the towers had to get taller. Then we end up with 2 60-story towers. So yeah, is there some ego that we built 60-story towers? Sure. But it wasn't the fact, like we didn't start with, okay, we're going to build the tallest tower. No, because it comes with its challenges. And
so, not necessarily take me to that meeting, but so you have that meeting with the city of Burnaby. Can you talk about the scope of this project seems to me so massive that if you're, buying suburban shopping malls and kind of, growing and you get this opportunity in Burnaby. But for them to kind of lay that down, here's what we're looking for to create kind of a second downtown center in Burnaby, apart from Metrotown, it just seems like such a massive plan. Like, can you kind of walk us through, I guess, in a very brief way, like how do you even start to think about how to do that? Like, is it like, okay, what are the steps when they start saying, this is what we're looking for, get to work?
Yeah, well, there's obviously like real estate is real estate and my wheelhouse is thinking about the real estate and the plan side. My partner, John Horton, has done a fantastic job of fostering relationships with the pension funds and on the money side. But yeah, again, it evolved. So, okay, great, you bought into this master plan idea, but then it's kind of like, where do you start, right? Like, so do you start on the edges? And ultimately, we decided like it's the best move was to be transformative. So, like we try to be as risk adverse or whatever. So that's probably the one move as the organization that Metrotown was so close, right? Like it was like, okay, we got to build something different, and we thought it needs to be transformative. So we thought the first move was the corner. Was next to the SkyTrain station. It was the tallest towers. It was the plaza. It was the outdoor environment, that mixed use story. And yeah, like the city was kind of fully behind this. Like, we want a world-class development. And we decided to go for it. Our leasing team, you know, canvassed the world, like for tenants or whatever for the retail. We were fortunate to get many first to market and local and kind of regional. And the two, we started off with two residential towers. Then ultimately we added a third into phase one partly. But again, our strategy was no one had ever sold two residential, two 60 story, like not one, never mind two. So yeah. Our strategy was that we designed the towers that they were, each tower was half was rental and half condo. So there's six elevator core. So there's two lobbies. So three elevators go to the top 30, three go to the bottom. So both towers were designed that because we were building this retail at the same time. So we didn't want to get stuck in our residential market where we couldn't sell all the units. So the strategy was, and our partner Hoop was on site because they were interested in the asset class. They wanted rental. So it was okay, you know, through our tools, we were basically half sold because they were two, it was designed rental. When we bought, went and marketed it, the market was strong. So we ended up selling all of Tower 2 as condo. And on Tower 1, we kept 300 residential units. So that was kind of how we de-risked as best we could this big project. But yeah, it definitely helps that we had a pension fund partner beside us, just with relationships with the banks and the covenant. Yeah.
Like, I'm just thinking of, because we're in an interesting moment right now. And I guess just thinking of, you know, you bought Brentwood Mall during the last real serious downturn, I guess, in 2009. The scale of these projects are, you know, you're still, the amazing Brentwood is kind of coming to fruition in the last couple of years. It's become very an exciting place to be. But these are like that long, the project length is, you know, it's decades, not years, right? I guess I'm just thinking of where we're at today. Can you talk a little bit about how you're navigating the ups and downs in these real estate markets? Like you mentioned how you sort of mitigated risk with the apartment kind of component, but now you're at the city of Lougheed is another one of your projects. Like you have multiple projects on the go. How do you kind of deal with market cycles?
Yeah. 2020, hindsight's 2020. So we're here, you know, 20, yeah. So we're, in, yeah, we're it's 20 years. We made it through all these cycles. So, like, looking back, there's a few things. Like, first of all, I think, you know, there's a lot of noise. Like, and in 2025, there's more noise than ever. Like, just because of social media, you're just bombarded. And social media accentuates it because sharp headlines, strong statements get more clicks. So, like that's the environment. But so I think it starts with fundamentals. Like, so yeah, was 2008, you know, a good entry point to the market? Sure. Is 2025 a good entry place to the market? Absolutely. I think you can overthink the market timing of it. Although I recognize that there's, you know, good entry points. So because these projects are, you know, are long, you know, I'd say obvious is that you got to recognize their cycles. And the most important thing, it sounds flippant, but you don't want to run out of money. So as a company, you need to manage cash flows. And we, because of our evolution, we had combination of income producing properties and development properties. So you know, development may be cycling, but we're still getting revenues from our income properties, from property management, asset management, leasing, et cetera. So we were diversified from a cash flow. We started off in retail and then added, you know, home building to it. So we were diversified in two asset classes, being commercial and residential. And as you mentioned, as I mentioned, is this flexibility to move between rental and condo, depending on what makes the most sense from either a financing perspective or pre-sale perspective or just the most profitable. And then I would say, and again, we stumbled into this, is we have these master plan properties, this holding income. We had no pressure to put a shovel in the ground. So you can, you know, with ourselves and our partners, we can decide to go on a new construction project when we feel confident and safe on the fundamentals at that time. So And you've seen it in the market where if you were buying land in 2019, 2018 at the peak of the market, and you had the interest rate clock ticking on your land, and now housing, you know, you got inflation going up and you got housing prices sitting flat or ticking down, that you know, we're seeing that now with the foreclosures and the bankruptcies. So having the advantage that we didn't have to build, you know, I think, you know, on the flip side, we learned that the cycles are sharp. Like the movement is sharp. Like, so the cycles could be 3, they could be 8 years, but prices and sales volume, I would suggest, don't move linearly. It's not like this nice graph. If your housing prices went up 5% in 2021, it probably went up 5% in 2 months. Like it might've been 45 days, and you know this better than I do. And it's the same with sales volume. So you don't want to miss those. So we've really focused on being able to be in the market at any time. So, you know, on this big project, it costs money to get through the kind of all the pre-construction, all the drawings, all the process with the city. So, you know, fortunately, our partners have aligned with us and we've kept projects moving forward so that we can be in the market and not miss the kind of sweet spot.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And one I don't think we talk about enough, that these kind of when the action happens, it's pretty dramatic, right? Like in the residential side, we get these demand shocks that kind of, yeah, overnight, you're talking about different price points, it feels like often. And on the downside, you know, you'll see some fairly dramatic deals, but it never quite feels the same way. Like if I think back to say 2016, 2017, when we were leaping in a couple months, you know, every week you were looking at a new price point. It's so, it all happens very quickly. That's really interesting. You know, Darren, I'm just thinking about how your investment thesis has changed. You mentioned early on kind of the starting kind of core thesis. Can you talk about SHAPE's investment thesis or how you're thinking about these projects today? And how it's evolved over time, I guess?
Yeah, like we started off in retail and like I said, low density. But, you know, in the back of our minds, we knew that the world was shifting towards more mixed use, more urbanization. And like the land use planners were way ahead, like were kind of ahead of the market. And like, you know, so Brentwood came our way and the market moved with us. Like we were very fortunate that and you know, from all kind of like the retailers, when we were doing those low density shopping centers, they didn't want to talk about structured parking. They didn't want to talk about two level retail. Like it was all about the automobile parking in front of the door, so that we knew that was changing. But we knew that program, so we ran with it to get the company started. So Brentwood gave us the canvas to really get into mixed use on transit. So somewhere along that spectrum, like I said, it wasn't all this grand plan before. We realized the power of what we had kind of fallen into is that these malls sitting on these regional shopping centers sitting on SkyTrain stations is the perfect canvas for a mixed use complete community, which is like the holy grail of planning, but now it's kind of the holy grail of the market. Is they used to talk about mixed use, like a complete community would be like Burnaby or Richmond. So meaning you could do all your everyday shopping, recreation, all within Burnaby, you don't have to leave. Well, the regional shopping center, because they're large, like there's 1 million square feet of retail, et cetera. So baked into that is the full spectrum from service to fashion to restaurants, from fast food, quick service, casual, premium, like the full range. Your lawyers, your insurance broker, the recreation facility. So that, like, we realize that that is so powerful in the Vancouver context. Like everyone's not the same. And then you attach it to, you know, the seamless connection to the SkyTrain. So yeah, we figured it out along the way. It's but the city society kind of moved with us as far as It's not for everybody, but if you're living in an urban environment, often your cost of housing expenses, so you're living smaller. So you won't need access to restaurants, to meeting places. So it kind of, we were shaping it, no pun intended, but we were really, like, society was moving with us. So yeah, there's lots of other places, ways to make money in real estate, but we landed on this one. And it's complicated, like, you know, operating, like, doing these developments around an existing shopping center, Richmond Center, like, that's, you know, I believe it's the number six. It's in the top 10 for sure. Highest performing shopping centers in Canada. And we're going to knock a Sears down alongside the Cal Fairview and build a mixed use, new retail street, new homes. So there's logistics, there's loading, like, there's, like, it is, so it's complicated. And we were just fortunate that we got the experience, like, because we had, like, we did it, like, we were, had to figure this all out. So now that we've figured it all out, I mean, that might be, we're still learning, but it's become a niche for us and we'll run with it while we can.
Hey everyone, pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
Hi, I'm Michael Yu.
And I'm Morgan Brown. And we're the founders of Oakwin Realty. We have 9 offices across British Columbia.
Serving all major markets of BC. If you're an agent out there, just like Adam and Matt, who happen to be licensed at Oakwin, please reach out to us at oakwin.com/join and type into that message box, the rep, and you'll receive a free gift and a promotion when you meet one of our leaders.
Thanks so much. And we're looking forward to meeting with you.
See you soon.
This podcast is sponsored by Fenway by Caliber, bringing 209 new homes and 24,000 square feet of retail space to Willoughby Town Center.
And this retail component isn't just adding to the area, Adam. It's enhancing an already thriving community hub where neighbors connect over boutique shopping, great food, and everyday essentials. This is one of the final new construction opportunities to own in the heart of Langley's Willoughby Town Center.
And speaking of Langley, is it me or is Langley all you hear about these days? It's become such a powerhouse with over 7,000 businesses, the population set to double by 2040, and that SkyTrain extension arriving in 2029.
What's incredible about this location is that you're getting the best of everything. Your steps from the Langley Event Center, currently undergoing a massive $149 million expansion. The new Tennis Center and future Willoughby Community Center are right across the street. Plus, you've got the new Smith Athletic Park just down the road.
The location really is unbeatable, with 8 schools within walking distance and just minutes from Highway 1. And what I love is that this is a Caliber project. They're Langley locals with decades of experience who really understand this community. They've partnered with Polyco Group to bring decades of development expertise to Fenway.
With Langley's population set to double and transit connectivity expanding, this is your chance to be part of BC's fastest growing community. Register at fenwayliving.com. That's FENWAY living.com.
Fenway, where small town heart meets urban sophistication.
How important is the SkyTrain to the vision that you're implementing now in terms of these shopping centers along SkyTrain? Like, how important is being on the SkyTrain in your mind?
It's important to recognize the local context. Real estate is not, it's massive. Every city's different. But in the, you know, the Vancouver context, and I would say like the Richmond, Vancouver, Burnaby, Coquitlam, New Westminster, in that context, SkyTrain is super important. And I think it's probably, like, yeah, it's, everyone says that. Like, I'm not saying anything new. But I think that it's probably more important than even the people are talking about it. Because it's like lakefront property. They're only building so many stations on those lines. So yeah, they added one extra one in Richmond, but they had planned for that before. So all of a sudden there's a scarcity, right? Like, people want to be near it. We're getting more and more congested, moving around. People want access to the SkyTrain. It's just, it's super, it's one of the boxes to tick. And now, you've limited the best real estate sites from an urban perspective down to these SkyTrain stations. Because it's lakefront property, I would argue that, you know, it's not the same, like, being adjacent to it is like having, you know, your garage or your car in the basement. Like, you wouldn't want to walk 2 blocks to your car, whether it's electric or not, park 2 or 3 blocks away. It's the same with the SkyTrain. Like, it is super important. And then you think that it's different than, like, you talk about transit communities, TOAs. It's different than all other transit, right? If I'm in my car, if I'm walking, I'm on my bike, or I'm on the bus, I can get out wherever I want. So when you talk about location, you talk about a location, a neighborhood. That neighborhood is really good, right? But it doesn't matter it doesn't really matter whether I'm 3 or 4 blocks, like 5 blocks, like that neighborhood is long. It doesn't matter. Before SkyTrain came, if you're in Brentwood or whatever, you could be like, I'm in Brentwood. Like, great. You know, you're a retailer or whatever, if you're an office tenant or a home, I'm in Brentwood. That's a great neighborhood. I want to be in Brentwood. As soon as you put the SkyTrain there, everyone just comes out one door, right? Like, you've pushed everybody. They're coming out that one door. So it changes everything. So if you're a retailer, and it's very so you've got competition. So if your competition is sitting there right at SkyTrain and there's significant traffic coming out of that SkyTrain station, why are you, the chances of you walking past your competitor, if you're 2 or 3 blocks away,
right?
And if you're an employer, where do you want the office? So like, this wasn't like 20, 30 years ago when I started in the business, we didn't know what SkyTrain was going to do. Like, everyone thought, okay, this is great for the environment or whatever, but you know, do you want to be right next to SkyTrain or do you be a few blocks away? You want to be right at SkyTrain. And depending, you know, different markets, important to transit and SkyTrain is different, but the ones I mentioned, the game changer.
I'm really interested in like the idea of, and we've never really talked about it, like the idea of transit oriented development, but it's not transit oriented. Like, this is something different. The SkyTrain is different than transit oriented development in that being next to a SkyTrain is not the same as being next to the bus route. Right? It's a very different thing. And I think you just outlined that pretty clearly. I'm wondering if you think, maybe I'll just put it this way, like, are all SkyTrain stations created equal from an investment standpoint? Like, how do you think about those lines? And maybe this is less a question for a project like the ones Shape's undertaking and more for somebody out there listening that's thinking of buying like a mom and pop investor thinking about buying a condo. How are you thinking about these lines and about these SkyTrain stations? How are you distinguishing between them and what's important and what's not?
Yeah, like obviously I'm biased, but feel free to challenge my thinking or whatever. They're not all created equal. I think the fundamentals are, you know, scarcity of land and population growth. Like, if you just pull yourself up to 40,000 feet, if you want to make money in real estate, it's population growth and supply constraints that generally over time will raise values, whatever. So that's at 40,000 feet. But then I think, you know, I would bring it down to which neighborhood and which SkyTrain station is, you know, demand and scarcity. So yeah, if you start going to each different SkyTrain stations, and some of them are, you can see where development can happen and not happen. So sometimes like, you know, it's changed a bit now that the province, you know, pushed on municipality zoning at all of them or whatever. Before that, you would look at it and say, okay, you could throw out 70% of the SkyTrains because there was just no development opportunities around it. So it's opened up a lot more. And I think, in Vancouver, Richmond, Burnaby, Coquitlam, SkyTrain's super important because it's connecting these town centers and they're, you know, kind of all linear and extending out to UBC along the Broadway line. That all really works well. Like, SkyTrain works well when, you know, the urban growth patterns are, you know, they're like linear. So you're connecting these town centers. Like, now you can really use it. So I would say the jury's out. Like, SkyTrain is an important piece of the Fraser Valley puzzle, but it plays a bit different role. It's more of a regional rail, like, and like, it gives you access. You'll be able to go from Langley to but downtown and like super as an alternative. And if they ever built SkyTrain farther east, like from Coquitlam to Port Coquitlam to Pitt Meadows to Maple Ridge, like, it's all linear. So that works really well, right? Surrey and Langley are big squares, and they function, they function different. Like, you got Scott Road, you got 120th, you got King George, you've got 152nd, you got 176, you got 200. Like, it functions in this square grid. So it's like people aren't moving around in their lives as much with SkyTrain. Like, it'll be great convenience. They'll get out of their car, they come downtown or move around. But it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds compared to some of the ones that I said that have this more linear, these established regional town centers. So that's a long-winded answer to it depends a little bit.
No, that's super interesting, though. So almost the new line in Surrey out to Langley is almost, in your mind, like regional rail, like another kind of West Coast Express, but probably easier.
Like, these lines also shape, right? Like, there's two things going on, right? You know, it's connecting development, but it's also shaping development. So over time, that Fraser Highway linear route, that will build up over time. I think that's all positive. That's all good. But where people's workplaces are, like where recreation is, it's not quite the same. That's all I'm saying is, you got a Langley Event Center here, and you got SkyTrain down at Willowbrook. You got business parks. You got industrial. Like, it's just your life out there, I believe, and is a little more dispersed. So lots of growth out there, super interesting opportunities, and lots of opportunities to make money. It just might look a little bit different than Burnaby, Richmond, Cookham.
Do you mentally kind of rank, hypothetically, and this seems like an easy one, but, you know, Brentwood versus Hold'em Station, you know, right next to each other. Obviously, the amazing Brentwood, the Brentwood Town Center is right at Brentwood, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on kind of just the different stations in the along the SkyTrain lines and how you're kind of differentiating them or thinking about them, if you are.
Yeah. So again, there's different ways to make money. Everyone doesn't want the same environment. But I do think that a significant portion of the population, the magic of the mixed-use complete community all within kind of 400 meters of your front door and SkyTrain, like, that's a super powerful formula. So I would suggest that appeals to more of the market than some of these other secondary SkyTrain stations. Doesn't mean that they can do well. It's just, if you're an urban buyer, you're more likely to value accessibility to social gathering place, restaurants, urban. Yeah, it's not for everybody. People live in lower density, more quiet communities, whatever. But if you're an urban buyer, I think that is a powerful spot. And again, I'm always thinking like supply, and like, it's only one site or two sites, then you're thinking, okay, well, but if there's a bunch of competition or whatever, yeah, that's how I'm ranking them. I'm looking at,
I'm kind of curious how, I guess, shape or maybe just you, Darren, thought about kind of the COVID and what kind of happened in terms of kind of growth patterns and, you know, what everyone sort of started talking about for a couple of years there, right? Everybody wants to more space. Everybody wants a home office. Everybody, it was almost the antithesis of what we'd all been talking about, which was kind of like the amazing Brentwood model, right? Everybody's kind of right near with all the super amenity rich, but smaller spaces, but you're kind of the world's outside your door. How did you kind of think of it then when it was happening, when there was this push kind of away from urban environments, I guess? And secondly, where are we at now? Are you kind of convinced that was like a COVID blip that, and we're kind of moving back towards this kind of path that we seem to be on, or is it something entirely different?
Yeah, I think that it has shifted, not as extreme as people maybe predicted. When COVID was happening, yeah, we were making adjustments to our units, to our buildings. I think the flexibility of being able to work not in the office is here to stay. I think that, you know, the ratio, I think
one of the major banks this week announced 4 days and 1 day off. I don't like most people. It's the office building is not going away, and I think that everyone kind of agrees. But what happened in that was twofold. So on our side at our properties, amenities for workspace, so you're not having to you can work in your unit. So we're thinking about it in the unit. But then we're also thinking about amenities at co-work space, like kind of your mini WeWork, where it has some environment so that it feels comfortable working from home or near home. And then I think in the office world, it's accentuated this social gathering together stuff, right? Like, so that was already kind of in that sphere of the knowledge industry and that culture of social gathering, collaboration, kind of creative city ideas. That was all there. It's just now accentuated even more. So if you're going to your work, now you know that you don't have, you could stay home. Now you want to go to a workplace. I think it's going to, the buildings that provide those amenities are going to excel. So I think that answered your question.
Yeah.
That might have gone off a bit of a tangent.
No. And kind of following up on it, I guess, and this goes back to these kind of projects that Shape takes on being kind of decades long projects, not, 2, 3, 5 year projects. But maybe I'll put it this way. How does Vancouver look different in 20 years in your mind? And are you guys looking to other cities? I know early on you mentioned kind of, I might be misquoting you here, but going after retailers from other regional, but also outside of Canada to kind of add spark to the landscape of the amazing Brentwood. Are you looking at other world capitals for inspiration, or do you have a line on what we look like in 20 years?
I think there's two parts to that question. So we do steadily look around the world for inspiration, different ideas. We employ in-house architects, and one of their roles is we want them to travel, we want them to study, whether it's Europe or Asia or Scandinavia or even the US. So we do that. Vancouver is very unique. And a lot of the world, especially North America, come here and study what we've done. So Vancouver has successfully stuck to an urban growth strategy, which was compact region with regional town centers, where we're going to focus density and growth, and we're going to connect them with transit. So that's pretty unique. In the planning world, lots of people talk about it, but here, all levels of government, the federal, provincial, municipal government, they're all on the same page. And generally, that's been pretty successful, and that's what you see across. So in Metro Vancouver, you see many more regional town centers with scale and height and density than you would in most cities in North America. At the same time, Vancouver is young, right? It's a young city. So we don't have, the historic and, that kind of historic densification. So we're somewhere in the middle. So I think when we look at other cities, we're looking at more specific design inspiration, whether it's building form or public plazas or walkways or greenways or affordable housing. We need to study on that. So we're looking at specific things, but it's important to not just cut and paste. That's a recipe for failure, to pick something that was done in Nashville and you put it here, or done in Copenhagen and you put it here, or Shanghai. I think Vancouver real estate is very specific. Part two, I think what your question was, what I see Vancouver looking like. I generally think there's more filling out of that. I remember, because Vancouver hosted Expo 86, there was all those aerial photographs, posters back before Google Earth, and that showed the Expo site with all the colorful pavilions or whatever. And you looked at that, and South Vancouver, the acres and acres of empty blocks. And now you look at it and it's all filled in. So I think you'll see that through all the town, all the town centers. That's what the map is going to look like. You're going to see more. It's the theme of urban intensification, I think, is going to disappear. I don't see the ALR being relaxed. I still see Vancouver as your Metro Vancouver as attractive on the world scale or provincial scale. So I think you're going to see more mixed use sprinkled in through the region that's not in town centers. The principles of amenities and social gathering, I think that that appeals to the creative class. And I would say the creative class is not just tech workers designing software. It's an industry. It's everywhere. The people are the same, right? We're human beings. We like collaboration. We like new ideas. We like social. So I think you're going to start to see the business parks, even light industrial. You're going to see these areas become more mixed use, more intensified. And I think the planning world, like 20 years ago, there was this very idea that you have to set boundaries between land use. Well, in 2025, planners are much more on to the mixing. It's much more organic. It's much, benefit for various reasons. So I think Metro Vancouver, you're kind of like the lucky sperm club. Like if you do real estate in Metro Vancouver, you've been given this opportunity because of land constraints, population growth. There's all kinds of areas where new opportunities are going to spring up and evolve. So super exciting. There's lots of stuff that no one's thinking about. I think they're out there because of that context.
Fantastic. I wish Adam was here because this is his question. So I'll try not to butcher it. So in real estate, Darren, they say, buy the rumor and sell the news. You got a rumor for us?
Well, the rumor is that I would suggest that, it's being talked about, but not a lot, is capital. Like urban densification, the projects become larger and more capital is required. And attracting capital right now is difficult, but it's needed to build these projects on transit. Like, because they're higher densities, they're just larger scale. So you need to attract capital. And right now, capital is risk adverse. So it's going to contribute to our scarcity challenge or problem. And right now we've got, because of the cycle and inflation and housing prices not keeping up, we've got people on the sidelines because not doing housing starts. But as the market picks up and moves, the challenge is going to be capital. So I think what you're going to see is it's really going to narrow the playing field. That from the bank lending equity partners, it's just going to be more and more difficult. So developers with the bigger balance sheet, whatever, the comfort, the experience. So it's really going to lower the playing field. And so it's going to really contribute to, I think, lack of supply on these higher density sites, which I think are still appealing to the public. And you're going to probably see more competition in the, in the wood frame space from the developers because they're smaller projects. So that's just my take on, maybe something that's dynamic that's happening that's probably not necessarily.
That's really interesting.
It's starting to be talked about a little bit, but yeah.
Huh. Yeah, that's really interesting. Two more quick questions for you here, just because we got you if you have a couple more minutes. You have an investment-minded niece. This is one we ask all the time. She's considering buying a property. Should she buy right now? And we should timestamp this June 2025. And what would you be suggesting she look at?
100%. I think you could, like I said before, you could overthink the market timing. But right now, clearly, we're at the bottom of a market. When it turns, I don't want to try and predict that, but it is going to turn. We need more housing. And right now, that product, the new product that's hanging out there, whether it's finished or about to be completed, that's below replacement cost. We cannot build that same unit today with the same amenities. So you're buying below replacement cost. So at some point, that gap has to close. So I think it's a great entry
point in the, you know, in the market because you're buying below replacement cost. Where, obviously, I'm biased, so maybe I'll pick one of our projects and then maybe I'll try and think of something else. I think the City of Lougheed project, pricing there is a little bit lower. I think there's more room for prices to move there. I think it's slightly underappreciated. The Lougheed SkyTrain station is super central. The energy is moving east. If the economy opens up and more resource, more industry, all that stuff, it's just easily accessible to it. And at the Lougheed SkyTrain station, City of Lougheed's on one side of the SkyTrain station, and we sold land to Pinnacle across the street. There's two sites. There's two sites at that station. Everything else, in my mind, I'm always biased on North Road, et cetera. Like it's good, but it's not at the SkyTrain. So I think there's room in that market for price appreciation. We're planning phase two at Lougheed, which is right next to the station. It'll feel very much like Brentwood with the restaurants and the plaza that all link phase one. It's going to be a different place. So that would be my bias. And if I were to pick, and this is completely blue sky because I don't know this market at all or whatever, but yesterday I was in North Vancouver, doctor's appointment. And it's like when they run rapid bus down Marine Way. North Van is completely land constrained. It's a beautiful place, access to the mountains, a SkyTrain road from downtown. It's, I think, probably a little more expensive to build because it's harder to get labor there. But I think when that congestion gets turned into a rapid bus going down Marine Way, I'm not sure how they connect it on Lonsdale or whatever. I think that's a super interesting market as far as not many people are talking about it. It's underappreciated. We don't have a project over there. And it could change. And all of a sudden, prices could move more than some other places because of the dynamic I just said. And like I said, I've spent very little time analyzing North Van, but that's something that I would be curious.
Fantastic. Maybe we'll leave it there. But Darren, we do have this segment called the Five Wire, Five Lighthearted Questions to end the show. Do you have time to stick around for that?
Yeah, sure.
This podcast is sponsored by Jethro Condos in downtown Langley. Over 100 homes under $425,000 with one-bedroom suites starting at $399,900.
Here's what's incredible, Adam. These condos actually cash flow. When's the last time we could say that about new construction in the Lower Mainland? With these entry-level prices, the numbers actually work for investors.
And you're in the heart of downtown Langley, surrounded by trendy cafes, artisan bakeries, and parks. The area is experiencing incredible growth and new development.
Yeah, the location is absolutely key. Jethro is steps from the future Langley SkyTrain station. Get in before that transit connection transforms the area. Because once that SkyTrain arrives, you're looking at direct connections across the Lower Mainland.
Jethro is a Whitetail Homes project. Whitetail Homes has over 25 years of experience with quality construction and finishes that exceed expectations. We're talking vibrant interiors, expansive windows, and thoughtful design.
For realtors listening, they are offering amazing cooperative incentives. This is a rare opportunity where the fundamentals make sense. Affordable entry, cash flow potential, and positioned for major transit infrastructure, an all-around win.
Register at jethrocondos.ca. That's Jethro condos.ca.
Jethro Condos, distinctly Langley, uniquely yours. Okay, so the first question, and we've already got one recommendation from you on the book front, but one book you've read recently that you'd recommend.
Yeah, I'm going to take the opportunity. I like to read. There's nothing that's really knocked me kind of out the last year or two, but I'll offer two suggestions. So my first one is Moneyball by Michael Lewis. It was a movie, but you got to read the book. Brad Pitt was in it. It blew my mind because baseball had been this had been around for 100 years or more. And you think that over the 100 years, people are going to figure it out. What's the best strategy? And along comes Billy Beane, the manager of the Oakland A's, and some other people doing research and completely change how they think about baseball, how they draft, what's important or whatever. So I thought that was super interesting because as we sit here in 2025 and you think everyone's thought of everything already, there's not. The second one is a book called The Problem with God.
wherever your mind is on spirituality and religion. I really liked it because it challenged, it took the hard questions like science, religion, like if there's a God, why is there all this suffering? Like it just, and like it just, it, for so many years, if you're on, if you're religious, I mean, you couldn't talk about it, right? Like you just got to listen to it. So I thought it was super interesting. It's Mark Clark, The Problem with God, with, you know, to wherever you are in that, you're thinking, it was just an interesting read for me.
Yeah, fantastic. You know, this is a selfish question. Do you, just thinking about baseball and kind of how the game was transformed that way, do you recognize hockey today compared to when you were playing in the WHL? Because you were, I mean, obviously a very good hockey player, but I feel like that was such a different moment in the sport. Like, how do you think about it, I guess?
Yeah, like Moneyball kind of opened my eyes to this thing, right? So now I've been kind of like, whether it's hockey or football or whatever, it keeps changing. So after I played, when I played, it was, you were skating around like you had a piano tied to you. Like there was so much hooking and grabbing. Yeah. Like that's why if you couldn't make the NHL unless you were big and strong, or like because you couldn't skate anywhere without someone holding you, and you don't like holding you, pulling you, like dump the puck in, and like you couldn't get near them. So then they started calling all that, and then so then it opened it up smaller, faster, and then they got super defensive, right? Remember the defensive neutral zone trap, whatever, like they couldn't score any goals, right? Because they were so good defensively. Well, and lo and behold, they figure that out, right? So now it's offensive, it's open, they're so fast. So puck control, they never dump the puck. They used to dump the puck and go chase. Yeah. Now dump it's all chase, puck right? control. Like, yeah, sorry, I'm kind of excited about this, but pulling the goalie, like that used to watch is like, oh no. Well, you see it in the playoffs. Like they had such good puck control that they were pulling the goalie 3 or 4 minutes, and whether they score or not, they got it down in that end. So, yeah.
That's great. I feel like we could do a second episode just on that, honestly. But I know you're a busy guy. In the last few years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
I started writing. Like I've always thought better when I make notes and whatever, but I never, like during COVID, I kind of started writing more formally. I think like taking topics or thinking in whatever it was I was interested in. It just advanced my like thinking, and when you're forced to kind of complete your thoughts. And so I started writing, and recently I started posting on LinkedIn. Like I've been on LinkedIn for 15 years and never posted ever. You know, like I'm the guy at the back of the classroom in the back row. And I kind of thought like, I don't know, I'm 56 years old. I'm like in my, all these ideas in my head. If I never say anything, it's kind of like, it just kind of, you know, more of it goes to the grave with me or whatever. So putting myself out there a little bit, trying to kind of raise ideas or thoughts that maybe everyone's not thinking about, or kind of polarized, and there's maybe a middle path. But yeah, it's flipping scary, right? Like for like to post something that your peers are going to read, right? So now it's like, now I, right? But it's helped my thinking. Right now I got to be like, if I'm going to say this, I kind of got to be convicted or feel like it's like I've thought it through enough. So yeah.
I know it's funny, two guys talking on a podcast, but I feel like everybody can relate to that, but I can definitely relate to that. That's for sure. It's, there's almost nothing scarier than hitting that post button. And I don't even say anything. What have you been binge watching lately, or a favorite movie recommendation for our listeners?
Yeah, I don't binge watch much, but I do watch lots of documentaries. There's one on Netflix. I think they're on season two now, but season one, Ancient Apocalypse, it's called, and Graham Hancock. It's all about, well, it's kind of like the same theme as Moneyball, right? It's like we thought about the pyramids and all these kind of ancient monolithic. And Graham Hancock, the kind of narrator, says, thanks. There's missing pieces to this story. And it doesn't add up that, you know, we know that they were super, like these things are like the technical advancement of, you know, how they built it. We don't know how they built it. And it's super dialed into cosmology and physics. And so that's kind of interesting. And what the story goes is these things, these monolithic, kind of whether it's pyramids or Stonehenge or whatever. They're on all the continents. Like they're on all the continents, right? Like, so it's like, okay, well, how did they know the story of history kind of started in the Middle East or whatever, and it kind of went from there or whatever? It's like simultaneously in South America, they were doing the same things in Europe and North America. So it's, again, it's kind of, it challenges the conventional thinking. I love the first season anyway.
And the title on that?
Ancient Apocalypse. It's on Netflix. You'll see it. It's out in the last couple of years.
Right on. Favorite band or music?
Every playlist is extremely various, but if I have to pick three, Eric Church, The Killers, and Triumph. There was a great documentary on Triumph that got me on the Triumph or whatever. So, yeah.
Right on. Last but not least, and thanks again for your time, Darren. Something you have purchased for under $1,500 in the last year or two that has had a positive impact on your life?
Yeah, I say ChatGPT. Like, I'm just on the edge of it. Like, I think the access to knowledge is just unbelievable. Like, I think that, you know, human creativity, like creativity and innovation, I think comes from the human mind. Like, it maybe that machines be able to do it, but AI. But it starts at the boundary of existing knowledge, right? So new ideas are kind of move existing knowledge to new, like AI allows you to get to that boundary of knowing what information is out there today, like instantly. Why are steel buildings more expensive than concrete? Like, I don't have to, like, you know, what's a comparable city in the U.S. to Calgary from demographics and industry? And it spits it out, right? Like, and it lists it all. So it's been super interesting. I'm just starting to, but my youngest daughter is not happy. Like, they are, like, that's taking up, you know, the amount of power and energy used for AI. So she's like, dad, like, so a bit of friction at our house when I want to ask ChatGPT.
You know, it is just thinking about that. I've really gotten into ChatGPT over the last year as well. And I feel like I've moved on to asking, like, how to say this, but I feel like I've moved to almost going to like first principles on everything I'm doing, trying to figure out what's the baseline. Let's ask it a question on how can I reimagine how I'm doing this? Or recreate how I do things almost. Like I started by asking like very kind of basics, like, you know, what do you Google search?
Yeah.
And I feel like how I'm engaging it now is so much deeper and more kind of structural. It feels like, man, I don't know what the world looks like in 5 years. But anyway, that's a good one. We've never had that one. And it's pretty good value. I can't remember what I spend it a month on it, but it's like, man, incredible value. So people that are using regular Google, how can people find out more about what you're doing there? And I know you mentioned LinkedIn. I'll plug you. Everyone should go follow you there if they don't already. But how can people find out more about what you're up to and Shape?
Yeah, like I'm one voice, right? Like Shape is a team. So when I talk about the stuff at Shape, it's like, you know, I've been super fortunate. Like we've been able to hire great people. Yeah, so shape.ca is Shape, and I'm on LinkedIn if I think you can search my name.
Right on. Well, thanks again for your time.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Darren Kwiatkowski, Executive Vice President and Founding Partner over at Shape Properties.
You know, we grew up with a lot of skis. In the prairies, you meet a lot of Ukrainian.
I think he has family from Winnipeg, which probably means he has family from the Ukraine.
Yeah, I know, and it's funny whenever I'll meet the kid. There's not a ton of Mennonites in the Lower Mainland. There are a few in Chilliwack and kind of more out Abbotsford
farming communities,
but people are always surprised when I can list off every single name.
It's a Winnipeg specialty. Every single Mennonite last
name. Every single Mennonite last name.
They were all in your. Yeah. They were all in your classic
school.
I got them all.
Anyways, Matt, that was a great conversation. Really, I wish I could have been there.
It was a great conversation. I feel like it was a different conversation than I think we've ever had on the show. And the SkyTrain stuff was super interesting, but the kind of future of the city and the urban transformation that's taking place. And just the scale of those projects. I mean, it was just interesting talking to him. Yeah, really, really excited with that conversation. So hope everybody enjoyed it.
Yeah, for sure. And Matt, before we cut for the day, what else do we got?
What else do we have? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for things like the Livewire. This is our weekly mailer where you get, shows like this, but also stats, different types of stats. You get sales ratios where you can dig into submarkets and different price bands and really get a sense of what's going on in your neighborhood of interest and really dig into the details. We also have, of course, tried and true, if you're looking for property-specific information, private client services.
Yeah, man. And if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor-level information for free. It's available at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. We've had a lot of listeners taking advantage of PCS lately. And why not? This is like the best way to get all the information that you want in one place. And it's really the best way to monitor the market with sold prices, days on market. And really kind of, I know in my PCS account, I'm starting to see certain trends in certain areas that I'm monitoring.
That's the thing. You can really start to see those trends often before they become common knowledge.
Yes,
which is exactly what you want in real estate. That's private client services over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And if you want to talk about that or anything else, you can try me at 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we got that Kokomo line inspired. Well, not inspired, but is that the way we... Clint Murphy last week, I just want to read out one message I got about Clint Murphy because it says... It's a realtor. I haven't asked him if I could do it, so maybe it'll remain nameless, but a realtor and obviously a VREP listener... Frickin' best episode of VREP 475. Thanks, man. Perfect. So if you didn't listen to Clint Murphy,
go back.
That's 475. And he's a fan of Kokomo, and so are we. And info at Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. Kokomo.
My God. I mean, not the song, but it's not to be put as
best song. It's not their worst.
It's not their worst song.
But what is their worst? Yeah. No, maybe it is their worst.
Yeah, it's probably their worst. Okay. Anyways, Matt, cut for the day. Have a great week, everybody. We're back here next week with another great episode.
Take care.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.